everybody, what's up? It's your host, Ryan Sketch, here at Sketchbook Audio. Thanks for tuning in. Hey, listen, that song in the background, it's one of my favorites. It's an oldie, but a goodie, by a band little known, I would say, called Hello Goodbye. The song is Dear Jamie, Sincerely Me. How many of you have written letters to your significant others or to guys or girls that you had a crush on? I know I'm one of them. And while they don't usually end well, there's a few people out there who take it and they take it to heart and they appreciate those little things. That's not what we're talking about here on Sketchbook Audio today, though. What we are going to talk about are a few awesome things. One of those being Aston Martin just came out with a limited edition DBS Superleggera. And basically, it's an homage to a classic. And I got to say, man, the wheels on this thing are epic. So we're going to talk specifically about wheels. Another thing I wanted to discuss is the Renault Megane RS Trophy R. Listen, it bothers me to no end that we don't get any cool hatchbacks here in the United States, especially since the Golf is all but dead. Volkswagen decided they are going to keep the GTI and the Type R here, the Golf R. They are going to keep that here in the States, which is great, but that leaves us with nothing else, right? Ford abandoned ship and is taking away the Fiesta and the Focus. Dodge doesn't even have a Dart. They had a hatchback plan. It ain't going to happen. And nobody's buying Fiat 500s, 500Xs, or 500Ls. So that's a moot point. What else do we have? The Chevy Cruze? It looks cool, especially in that blacked out RS package. But frankly, it's underpowered and very underwhelming. Yes, you can go out and buy a Civic Type R, but who has $44,000? Not me. So what do we have left? Not much. However, what we do have is a car that's been on my list for a little while now, and I got to test drive it recently, and I loved it. So we're going to talk about the BMW X2, and I'm going to tell you why I think it's more of a hatchback than it is a crossover. Furthermore, I really want to get into, briefly, my favorite and just all-time dream car, and that's the Dodge Stealth or the 3000 GT, whichever one. Both of them are pretty awesome, especially when you get the VR4 or the RT Twin Turbo, and I will tell you why. So stay tuned for all of that and a little bit more coming up today. Okay, everybody, thanks for tuning in. Your host, Ryan Sketch, here at Sketchbook Audio. Thanks for coming and being with me today. It's awesome that you guys are here with me. Hey, I wanted to talk about a couple things before I get into the major topics I wanted to talk about. And one of those is I decided to quit my job as being an engineer. Why? Basically, I don't have an engineering background. That's the simplest answer I can give you. I don't even have a degree in engineering. So how I got into it is beyond me. In fact, I've managed to fool apparently enough people that they were willing to pay me ridiculous amounts of money to do it. Fact of the matter is I was really good at it. I didn't want to do it anymore. I don't want to work for the man. I don't want to look at, it just wasn't me. It wasn't where my heart was. And that's kind of a call to everybody out there who's listening that if you're not doing something you love, A, you're not going to be doing it 100%. B, you're not going to be in it and you're basically selling your soul to the man. And C, life just doesn't become very meaningful when you're not doing what you love. Listen, life is too short to just be stuck doing something for the sake of making money to pay bills. I got tons of bills right now. In fact, I'm probably in a little bit of debt. But I found some things that I love doing, and I am hitting them hard, and I got my own little business started up. So hopefully this takes off and it goes somewhere, but it affords me the time to A, do this, and B, work on a couple other projects that I have. One of those being, I picked up a little gig with a t-shirt company called Blip Shift, and please go check them out. Yes, this is an advertisement for them. Go check out blipshift.com and look at all their really cool shirts because they're all really unique. Every one of them essentially is a limited edition. They run a certain amount of them and then poof, they're gone. I actually just bought a couple myself, both of which had to do with Paul Walker and Fast and Furious. I'm a huge Fast and Furious fan. I will go and see every one of them. However, I will say I really wish somebody would make a Fast and Furious that has anything to do with the original two or three films. I don't see it happening anytime soon, but wouldn't it be nice? Anyways, so I got some t-shirt designs coming out that I hope you guys will check out. I'm going to post them up on Instagram as soon as I'm allowed to. And hopefully you guys like them and maybe even purchase them. Speaking of money and ways to fund me, you can also fund me through Anchor. You can be a supporter and do it on a monthly basis, an annual basis, a daily basis, just a one-time thing. And listen, all that money goes to really good things. Right now, I'm saving up all the money that I've been earning, and that's going to eventually go to some charities. And one of those charities happens to be for a friend of mine that I just lost about a week ago. And he's a big cosplayer, and I dabble in it, we'll say. But he was like on a whole new level, and I miss the guy a lot. He was just, man, he was a hero, true hero. He even looked like Thor and Santa Claus. So when a guy is 6 foot, I don't know, seven, 290 pounds, and has an epic beard and can do the whole dreadlocks thing, or, you know, the long hair, the ponytail, it's blonde. Man, he fit it. He was born to play those roles. So Rick, we miss you, and I'm going to try and do my best to carry on your legacy in one way or another. So that said, you as podcast listeners, especially if you're cosplay fans, check him out on Instagram, see his past work, and follow him a bit, because we're going to be doing some really cool things in his name, including a RickCon, which it's going to be a big charity effort. So stay tuned. I'm going to talk about that a little bit more as we go on in the next couple months. But definitely, if you support me, that's where some of the money's going to go, and I look forward to it. So anyways, we need to get into the show. I've got three big topics to talk about, and let's hit the ground running. So first off, I wanted to talk about the Super Leggera Aston Martin that they made for Her Majesty. I believe it's called the On Her Majesty's Secret Service DBS Super Leggera. It's the 50th anniversary of a Bond film, which had that car, the original one, the original DBS. And first of all, the colors are identical. It's like this really cool silverish green. Second of all, the wheels. So old school wheels had a lot of spokes, like a lot. And a lot of them were very intricate, very detailed and ornate. Now, while a lot of that doesn't translate very well into modern day cars, especially the tinier rally wheels, Aston Martin said, fuck it, we're going to do whatever we want, and we are going to take those original wheels and pretty much mimic the design a little bit, but also make them huge. These wheels are, I don't even know, it looks like probably 22-inch, and it's almost silly seeing them on a sports coupe, but at the same time, they just feel right, and I love it. I absolutely love it. Plus, I'm a huge Bond fan. So check it out on autoblog.com. You can see exactly what I'm talking about. And I'll try to get some pictures up on the Instagram account, which is sketchbook_audio. And you guys can take a look at that. Now, I do want to talk further about wheel design, and not just on the Aston Martin, but just in general. Look, wheels are one of the most important thing about a car. One of the reasons being, they set the stage for your car's overall shape, we'll say, and the overall feel of your car. If you're going to have a big off-roader, like a Wrangler or an FJ Cruiser, you're going to have something like beadlock wheels, or a smaller wheel but a massive tire. If you're going to have something that's like the Ford GT or this DBS Super Leggera, you're going to have fairly large wheels, but they're going to be lightweight. So something like aluminum, I've even seen titanium, carbon fiber, like the Ford GT has. And then when you have some crazy luxury car like this, you have the ability to get something that's a really wacky design. Now, there are scenarios where a certain car calls for a specific type of wheel that doesn't look very attractive. That being a lot of these hybrid cars, they have this directional type wheel. So you can see the spokes are twisted a little bit and it looks like they're going in one direction or the other. It's really confusing when the wheels look like they're supposed to be going forward, but they're actually backwards. So as the car is driving forwards, it actually looks like the wheels are spinning backwards. It's a neat trick, but it's also kind of, it's confusing when you're driving next to one of those cars. Definitely a good way to get extremely dizzy and nauseous when you're driving next to one of those. Interestingly enough, Ralph Gilles, the head of FCA's design studio, he is not a fan of directional wheels. And I think part of it is a lot of car companies that do directional wheels, Kia being one of them. Land Rover's really big into them right now, Honda, Toyota. It's just that not a lot of them do them right. And I have seen a lot of really cool concept wheels that have that directional focus, but they do it right. And one of the reasons why I think one style is done right versus the other is the size. If you have a tiny wheel and you have all this intricate detail and it makes it look like the wheel is going in one direction or another, I don't think it does the wheel and the design and the car any justice. But if you have a larger wheel and a bigger surface area to work with, I think your propellers, we'll call them, can stand out a lot more and actually look appealing. One of those cars that I'm thinking of actually is the Chrysler Portal concept. And I will post pictures of that up on the Instagram page. But if you take a look at that wheel, and this is one of the real funny thing about this is when they were developing this car as the SG1, which the SM1, Sergio Marchionne 1, I believe is what it stood for. That would be my guess. Is Ralph came into the design studio and he looked at the wheels and he said, "I love the car, but you know how I feel about directional wheels." And that's a paraphrase. Don't quote me, but that was pretty close to what he said. And ultimately, they ended up going with that wheel design. Now, the one thing I love about it is where you would normally have the negative space, they flip-flopped it. So you have these broad column strokes of silver, and the pockets are black and very, very dimensional, very 3D. And it creates this really cool windmill type effect. I like them. There's something about it that's fitting for this car. Specifically the fact that when you have an electric car, you don't need to have the air pockets that a typical wheel has. Like say, for instance, a Charger or a Challenger Hellcat with a big 20-inch, 21-inch, 5-spoke wheel, you don't need all of that air. It's actually bad for the car. It's bad for any car anyways. It's drag. It's got a dual purpose. One of those purposes being bad. It traps air and it becomes drag. The other part of it is it's good because it allows airflow into the wheel for braking. There are other ways to get airflow in to that area, one of them being vents and ducts that pull air in from the side of the car or under the car or through the front of the car, and it directs the air into that area. But generally for an electric car, you don't want to have a lot of air flowing through there because it's just drag. It's more resistance. And of course, an electric car or a hybrid is trying to be as fuel efficient as possible. So you have less and less negative space on the wheels. Now, the Chrysler Portal has large looking pockets, but when you actually get up close to those wheels, you can see that each hole really isn't all that big. So there's not a lot of air getting trapped inside there. And I'm sure there's plenty enough air getting in there to cool the brakes and whatnot, especially since, come on, this car's not going 200 miles per hour. So it doesn't really need the cooling that a Hellcat or a Demon does. Like I said, there are other car companies that are doing these directional wheels. One of the ones that I think that is not doing a very good job of it, and I hate to bash them because I happen to have one, but Land Rover. Land Rover and Range Rover have been switching over to these, atrocious propeller directional wheels. And I don't think they do the car any justice. It's, first of all, it's not a fuel-efficient vehicle in the first place. So it doesn't need wheels like the Chrysler Portal or any of these electric cars, the Hyundai Ioniq, the Honda Clarity. Those all have very tight wheels. They don't have a lot of air pockets or gaps or spokes for that matter. So when I see the wheels on some of these cars, like the new Evoque, the new Discovery, and a couple other cars I'm trying to find, and I'll post these up on the Instagram page, I just don't think they do the car any justice. Now, the wheels that are on my Evoque, I absolutely love. They're massive. They're 19 or 20 inch, and each spoke is very straight, and it's a very precise wheel. There's a lot of air going through because of how many spokes there are, but at the same time, it just creates a very clean surface area. And I think that's a little bit more what Range Rover and Land Rover should be going for anyways, is something that's a bit more elegant. Now, I can't say that any of these directional wheels offer any functionality, especially when considering going off-road or anything. And like I said, directional wheels are hard to design anyways, so to make them look good is even harder. So I don't know. It just, what do you guys think? Do you like directional wheels? I'm going to post up a bunch up on the Instagram page. Some cars do it right, and some most don't, in my opinion. But again, that's just my opinion, and that's what Sketchbook Audio is for, to hear your guys' opinion and discuss what works and what doesn't work. So like I said, definitely check out the Instagram page. We are going to go over that stuff very soon. Moving on to the next topic, the Renault Megan RS Trophy R, and just hatchbacks in general. We don't get these in the States anymore. Or first of all, we never even got a Renault. Can somebody correct me on this? How do you pronounce this? It's M-E-G-A-N-E. Megane? Megan? I don't know. Megan? Megan-E? I don't know. So somebody correct me, please. That's a great opportunity. Send me a voice message and correct me on how to say this. I know there's a few British people, some French people, and Italian people who are listening to this. So please, please send me a message. Por favore. Grazie. Danke schön. I know a little bit more. And merci beaucoup. So it bothers me that we're not getting any cool hatchbacks here in the States anymore. The Ford Focus RS is gone. The Ford Focus ST is gone. The Fiesta, I think, is up in the air, but I'm pretty sure we're not going to get the next generation. The Volkswagen did commit to keeping the GTI and the Golf R here in the States, so that's cool, but also not my cup of tea. The Audi A3, it's a little bit more wagon-esque than I would like, but I do like it. Volvo has some gorgeous wagons, but not hatchbacks. So, and then there's this new trend of taking a sedan and turning it into a what they call a Grand Tour, i.e. BMW in their GT series. And then Volvo has the Polestar 2 that's coming out, which has a fastback design with a liftgate, or a liftback, sportback, however you want to call it, fastback. Much akin to the Audi A5 and A7 sportbacks, as well as the, like I said, the BMW GT, the 3 and the 5. I don't think the 7 has one. Not to be confused with the Grand Coupes either. These ones are, you know, they don't necessarily have a coupe-like look to them. They just have a hatch. And one of the cars I have been looking at that has a hatch that's not quite an SUV or a crossover, but still is a hatch, is the BMW X2. We don't get the X1 and the 1 Series hatchback, or I think the 2 Series has a hatchback as well. We don't get those here in the States. But the X2, after driving it, is definitely a hatchback, much like the Dodge Caliber or the Renault Megan or Megane, whatever you want to say, more so than it is an SUV. I believe the X1 and the X3 and the X5, they're all either a crossover or an SUV, true to that name. But we just don't have anything cool here anymore, and I hate it because my dream car at the time was a Caliber SRT4. and it had a hatch. It had that functionality. It was just cool. What I would love to see is Jeep take the Compass and turn that into the rally art kind of look that they did a concept of not too long ago. And also, I think it was like 2007 or 8. So actually, it was 10 years ago. But also, I don't know, make it more like the Trackhawk, just tinier, lowered to the ground, put on some aggressive wheels, a bit of a body kit, dual exhaust, and a spoiler. And there you go. You have yourself a fast, essentially, hatchback. And yeah, we're just living in a totally different world now, and it pisses me off because I love hatchbacks. Sound off if you like hatchbacks. Let me hear it. I'm going to post my top 10 favorite hatchbacks onto the Instagram page, and I want to know what yours is. So tag me in your list of 3, 5, 10, whatever you want to do, sketchbook_audio, tag me, and I would love to see what your favorites are. Or shoot me a voice message. You can do that on the Anchor app, or you can go to the webpage, anchor.fm. Or I believe now, any podcast platform you listen to my podcast on, you can go into the notes section, or there's like a little voice message thing, and you can send me a voice message. And I promise you, I will put it up here on the show, but you got to send me one. So I can't post a voice message if you guys don't send me any. So anyways, moving on, hatchbacks, we talked about them, and we are moving on. One of the things I really want to interject with real quick before I go on to my fantasy car is BMW and their massive grille design language on the X7, the X5, and the 7 Series. Have you guys seen this grille, or just the cars in general, in person? Because if you haven't, you need to. Or maybe you don't, because they're hideous. And I hate to make fun of somebody else's car design, because the cars themselves are gorgeous. The X7 is freaking awesome. But for a car that big and that expensive, how the hell did Kia make a better front end than BMW and their grills? I just don't get it. Even Audi has some issues with some of their trapezoidal type grille. It looks really good on the Q8, in my opinion, and on the Q3, but on the Q5 and on the Q7, it kind of gets lost in translation, and it's too ornate. I don't know. Oddly enough, I do like it on the A4, the all four wagon thing that they have. I think that's kind of cool. It's definitely a different interpretation of off-road worthiness, but hey, the car can do some outback thingies, and I do like that. I appreciate that about Audi, but I can't get over this grill, this big mouth gaping, eat you alive grill. And I think what they were going for was the bigger the grill, the more aggressive and the more intense the vehicle is. But honestly, I think for as big of a car as it is, maybe they should have tried something a little bit more subtle and narrow. A grill I think that would have worked really well for this is the BMW Z8 Alpina. And I'm going to post a picture of this up on the Sketchbook Audio Instagram page. But when you look at the Alpina, it's a pretty big roadster, you know, for what it was. And it's expensive, and they're really freaking nice. Also very rare. But its grille, it was wide, which gave it the impression that it was a wide-stance vehicle, but it was very narrow. It wasn't tall. And, you know, that's something that a lot of roadsters do anyways, is they have a very narrow grille. But, or at least they used to. I just think a grille a little bit more subtle like this, you know, still keep the dual kidney grill because that's BMW heritage and everything. But I don't know. If I were to redesign either of those vehicles, the X7 or the 7 Series or the X5, I would narrow that grill down a little bit. Let me know what you guys think. Do you like the big grill? Do you not? Maybe I'll do a poll up on the Instagram page. Like it or hate it. Right now I'm on the hate it side. So, you know, it is what it is. Anyways, let's move on to my dream car. And that is the 2000. No, I'm sorry. Whoa, way ahead of myself. I wish it existed in the 2000s, but it doesn't. The 1991, 92, 93 Dodge Stealth RT Twin Turbo and its twin, the Mitsubishi 3000 GT VR4. Why do I love these cars so much? Given the fact that they're both from car companies that don't seem to care about those kind of cars anymore. Mitsubishi being one of them. The biggest criminal of that. But it's the fact that back then, the technology that they had in these two vehicles was rare and expensive. So the vehicles that did have it were your Ferraris, your Lamborghinis, your Maseratis, whatever. And that's active aero, active exhaust, and a all-wheel steering. I think the last vehicle to actually have that, at least here in the United States, was the GMC Sierra Denali. It had, I forget what it was called. It was like all terrain or sport track or no, that's the Ford Explorer sport track. Anyways, it was just the pinnacle of tech. And I loved it. So I'm on Wikipedia right now taking a look at this. Just to give you a brief description, the Mitsubishi GTO or the 3000 GT was a front engine all-wheel drive 2+2 hatchback sports coupe manufactured and marketed by Mitsubishi from 1990 to 1999. The Dodge Stealth actually died, I believe, in 2000 – in 1995. So the Mitsubishi carried on a little bit longer. I believe the story behind that had something to do with the union, but needless to say, it was a twin turbo V6. I believe it's a 3-liter 24 valve V6. You could get naturally aspirated or you could get twin turbochargers. Like it says, active aerodynamics, adjusted the front and rear spoilers, which what car has that right now? That's real big. The Trackhawk, the Jeep Trackhawk, and the Alfa Romeo Stelvio and the Giulio Quadrifoglios. They have that kind of active aero. And this was a car that existed over 20 years ago. How about that? Let's see what else. Basically, the Stealth was a baby Viper. And it was a little bit more attainable than a Viper. Also happened to come out before the Viper. But it was so freaking muscular and powerful and cool. I believe the twin turbo version had 320 horsepower, three something. And then the base model had 200 and... I'm looking for the numbers here and I cannot freaking find them. Wheelbase, predecessor engine. It doesn't even tell you what the horsepower was. Here we go. Peak power. 160 horsepower for the Stealth for the base engine, and then it went up to 223 horsepower for the RT, and then 320 horsepower for the twin turbo. So just a freaking beast, especially for the time, right? That was at a time when fuel economy was a really big thing, and you know, everybody was downsizing their engines except for trucks, and finding a car that had this much horsepower was few and far between. So especially under $100,000, and this thing was well under $100,000. I think these things came out at around 40, which I guess if you throw in inflation and all that stuff, it might have been closer to $100,000 car at that point. Who knows? The fact is it's my dream car, and it's hard to find one that's in good condition and that's not beat to shit. But let's be frank, I probably would beat the shit out of one too if I had it, just because they're that cool. The last thing I want to get to, Before I go on to the last thing, because we only have 3 minutes, why don't you tell me what your favorite car was? What was your dream car growing up as a kid, and what really got you into cars? Truthfully, my first car that really pulled me into it, into the fold, was my dad's 1971 Mach 1. Then I saw a Stealth for sale when we were talking about me getting my license in my first car. And I said, nope, that's what I want. That's it. And I truly found out about the Stealth from one of my high school teachers. He had a 3000 GT VR4 in mint condition. He sold the thing for like $35,000 in 2002. And it blew my mind how much money he got for that thing, given the fact that it was an 8 or 9 year old car at the time. But that's what really pulled me in. So what was your dream car? What pulled you into the automotive industry? I would love to hear about it. Either throw me a message on the podcast or do it on the Instagram page. Lastly, before we head out of here, I thought this was a really cool detail that just showed up in the news. And that's, if you have a Supra for the MK3 and MK4 Supras, guess what? They are going to be offering new parts. Toyota will be offering new, certified, warrantied OEM parts, and that's freaking awesome. So if you have those two generations of Supra, first of all, you're lucky, and it's awesome. My neighbor actually has one. It's a white one. It's mint condition, and it roars. But if you were ever to damage it, looks like Toyota is going to be able to offer him brand new repair parts. So that's it for Sketchbook Audio this week. I have a commercial advertisement that I did that it's a sponsored segment, but I want you guys to take a listen to it. If you're going through depression at all, first of all, get help. Reach out to somebody. Don't fight that battle alone, because it's hard to win. And I don't want to see anything bad happen to anybody. And I've been through a lot of that. I've had depression, PTSD, and I've got a lot of friends that go through the same thing. And it's hard. I understand that. So reach out to somebody and take a listen to Kristen and Chill. They also have a podcast here on Anchor, but you can listen to it on any other platform. It's a pretty good podcast. I like it, and it's definitely uplifting. So thanks for tuning in to Sketchbook Audio. Like I always say, be good to your neighbors, be good to your friends, be good to your family, hug somebody you love today, and get your sketchbooks out and start sketching. Do it. Peace.